Hello, I'm Lina Khmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. UN member states, activists, and policymakers are gathered in New York City for the 79th United Nations General Assembly, UNGA, and the Summit of the Future. According to the UN, the gathering marks a crucial milestone in the global effort to accelerate progress towards the 17 Sustainable Development Goals and underscores the urgent need for enhanced international cooperation to address pressing challenges such as climate change and global health crisis. UNAIDS is hosting a special event during UNGA seeking more funding into new HIV prevention technologies for people at risk of HIV infection. According to UNAIDS, women and girls accounted for 63% of all new HIV infections in 2022 in sub-Saharan Africa. For more insight, I spoke with Winnie Byanyima, the executive director of UNAIDS.
We have made a lot of progress in fighting HIV/AIDS. Actually, the global HIV response, the global AIDS response, is one of the most successful stories of multilateralism. So I'm here at the United Nations first to showcase global solidarity at its best. That 25 years ago, the world came together, rich and poor countries all over the world, they came together here and agreed to fight together. They put up a program. This is the program I lead, the joint program that would set the direction, show the targets, bring the data, and advocate for the policies to end AIDS. They put together a global fund, which up to now still is renewed every 3 years, and that money goes to the poorest countries to help them fight this disease. And the American government set up its own program called PEPFAR. All of that together has led to a world where three quarters of the people living with HIV are on treatment. But we still have 9.3 million people who are not on treatment, whom we need to get on treatment. 31 million are on treatment. So we are a success story, but we still have a journey to go. I've mentioned 9.3 million people who are not on treatment. 1.3 million new infections last year. We need to close that tab. So I'm here first to say the world can come together at the United Nations and achieve a big goal like ending a disease. Two, to say, but we are close to ending it, but we are not there. We must sustain the gains and accelerate progress and achieve that target in 2030.
You are attending the gathering with two young activists. Talk to us about the significance of young people's voice in the global fight against HIV, and particularly in Africa.
We have 1.3 million new infections every year, about that. And this number isn't going down as fast as we want. Most of those new infections are of young people. Young people have been born at a time when they're not seeing the deaths that some of us saw when there was no treatment. They've found treatment. So they don't see the deaths. They don't understand the risks that come with unprotected sex. So we have many young people still being newly infected. And in Africa, the number of young girls, of girls and young women being infected is 3 to 4 times more than the number of their counterparts, boys and young men. So we must focus on why young women are at a higher risk of infection than boys and men. We must find the solutions for them. So we brought two young women here who are living with HIV and who can talk about, this is not a death sentence. I'm on treatment. How do I get my treatment? How do I deal with stigma and discrimination? How do I survive? And this is a powerful message to the member states here, governments here, about the importance of addressing this issue of 3,100 girls infected every week in Africa. We want the member states here to know that this is a crisis. It's not a small matter. It's an issue to address amongst all the other challenges they are addressing. And they are also speaking to young people to say that HIV is not a death sentence, that you can live your life, but you need to be tested and to get on treatment. And if you're not yet positive, you need to protect yourself.
Speaking of treatment, prevention, Lena Kapavir has shown some success in trials. Talk to us about how this new finding is really going to be a game changer in the fight in the prevention of HIV, and what are the main obstacles to its widespread rollout, particularly in low-income countries?
This disease has no vaccine to prevent and no cure. But in between those two, science has given us many tools for prevention. There are like condoms, there's something called PrEP, which is a tablet, and there's lenacapavir you have just mentioned. There are, of course, also tools for treatment. Now, amongst the tools for prevention is this new one you have mentioned, lenacapavir. It is an innovation by a company called Gilead. This is an injectable. One can get two injections in a year, one every 6 months, and that will prevent them from getting HIV, whoever they have sex with, right? So now lenacapavir is available on the market in America for about $40,000. It's not available for the poor countries yet. That's too high. Scientists or economists and scientists tell us that this can actually be produced generically for as low as $100. And if the market grows, it can come down even $40 per person per year. That would be affordable. So the issue now is that lenacapavir, which could be a lifesaver, especially for young people in Africa, but who are just young people with a lot of libido having sex, who need to protect themselves, or people who are criminalized, like sex workers, like gay men who hide from services, would also come out twice a year to get what they need for prevention. So this could turn around the pandemic and we could turn off that tap of new infections. However, price is the issue. And that's because Gilead, under international laws, can keep its price there if it wants. So we're trying to persuade Gilead to pass its technology on to other companies in the South to make generics, to bring the price down so that it moves quickly to the people who need it. That's the challenge. Intellectual property laws are a barrier to bringing price down. We're trying very hard to speak with Gilead about sharing the technology. And I think that they are listening. So I hope we'll get this to be licensed to many companies, including in Africa, to make lenacapavir available for our young people especially.
And what specific actions are you urging global leaders to take at the assembly to ensure accessibility of lenacapavir and other technologies or treatment prevention tools that young people in particular and HIV patients in general need?
Our Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for a summit of the future. And the reason for that is that the United Nations was set up to create a world where we have global rules that we all respect and that give all countries a chance to grow their economies, to have peace and to have people thrive. But the world has become so complicated today, the rules are not respected. And both big and small countries, rich and poor countries, are breaking the rules. So part of the work we are doing here at the General Assembly is to recommit governments to to start processes of reforming the United Nations so that it is strong again, so that the rules work. Now, among the rules that I am pushing for is that we reform the international financial architecture, because we could end AIDS if the developing countries, particularly low-income countries of Africa, had the money they need to pay for their own responses. Today, low-income countries of Africa are choking on debt. And the reasons behind this debt that is stopping them from investing in health and education and social protection of their people is because in the global financial system, the ground is not level. Our countries in Africa borrow at a higher cost than rich countries. The debt that has been accumulated was borrowed to do infrastructure. That was a good thing to open up the African economies. But the interest rates went up, and that was not a fault of African countries. That came up with the war in Ukraine. Interest rates went up, and now the servicing of the debt is crowding out the investment that should go in health and education. We want the debt to be restructured. That is part of the process that we hope can start here. Quick, comprehensive debt relief to free resources for our countries to pay for fighting HIV, other health needs, and the education of girls. Girls' education protects them from HIV infection. We know that from our research. So that is one of the reforms that I am pushing on, and UNAIDS has produced some reports this week that show just how much the debt servicing is prohibiting the investments that you need to fight and end AIDS. And with that, we hope to influence a reform in that direction.
You say you are advocating for some reforms. What are your hopes in terms of achieving the 2030 goals when it comes to curbing the incidence of HIV/AIDS? You said earlier that we are almost there.
The 2030 goal, we insist, can be achieved. And we do see some countries moving fast towards that goal. We have at least 6 countries that have achieved the midterm goals of 2025, that is achieving the treatment targets. So we believe it's achievable, but there are 3 things that need to happen. 1, the financial constraint, what I've mentioned, debt reduction, to open up resources to invest. And that investment isn't just in HIV, it is investment also in education of girls, it's investment in the broader health system. All these are needed. The financing is so important. So we need the debt relief for particularly African countries with the highest burden. We need the science to reach the people. We need to get these new revolutionary, transformative tools of prevention and treatment like lenacapavir, which can actually also be developed into a treatment, an ARV for treatment. So we need to move that quickly. So we need to work around these barriers of intellectual property and get the price down. And third, we need to have the policies in place that enable everyone, irrespective of their sexual orientation, their age, their race, to come forward and get the tools they need. So 3 areas that we need to work on: the funding, the science, the technology, pricing it down, and the rights, the human rights and the policies that need to make the ground level for all. With those 3 things, we can end AIDS.
And finally, Mrs. Byanyima, I wanted you to share a message to young people, because it's really something that you seem to be passionate about, the state of young people, the health and well-being of young people. As a leader, as a woman, an African woman, and also as a mother, what will you tell young people today? What message can you share
to help them better understand that they need to protect themselves, that HIV and AIDS is real, even though it's not a death sentence.
Well, you said it. What I would say to our young people in Africa is that in spite of all the negative media that is out there about Africa, poverty, disease, war, whatever, that Africa is a continent of opportunity and that they are privileged to be born and to be living in Africa. They should value their lives. They should value their lives, protect their health, acquire the best education that they can get. And our continent is growing. It's the continent with the youngest people in the world. It's the continent with the hugest natural resources in the world. It is growing. And despite the challenges, political, economic, social, it is growing, and they are the ones growing it. So protecting their health is critical. Having sex and enjoying it is a good thing, but you have to do it with care. You have to know how to protect yourself, get the information, and get what you need. Condom, PrEP, whatever. Take what you need. And when you are, every now and then, check, test, and see that you are healthy and that you have not acquired HIV. If you have, get on treatment. It's not a life sentence. You just take your tablet and you're still okay. So protect your health. Africa needs you.
That was Winnie Byanyima, the executive director of UNAIDS, speaking to us from the UN headquarters in New York. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. Jerop Limo is a 24-year-old HIV and sexual and reproductive health and rights activist from Kenya. She is the executive director of the Ambassador for Youth and Adolescent Reproductive Health Program, ARRP. Drawing from her personal experience of living with HIV since childhood, Jerop has been passionately advocating to advance the health and well-being of young people living with HIV. She joins UNAIDS Executive Director Winnie Byanyima at the UN General Assembly in New York. I caught up with her to discuss her work. Take a listen.
I'll start by saying I found out when I was around the ages of 13, and I was a child then, and my parents were really trying to figure out what was going on with my health because I had been sick for quite some time, and I had some tests done, and that's how I found out. I found out because I was getting sick often, and the doctor was just trying to figure out what is going on with my health. So I found out that I was actually HIV positive, and hence why I was going through a lot of what we now call opportunistic infections. In terms of challenges, I would really describe my acceptance journey as a challenge in itself, a journey that took years to go through. And I'll describe these issues of adherence. I really did have a huge issue with adherence. It's not easy to take medication every day. And I remember I was so tiny. I was not doing well health-wise, and I was on medication. And it was quite a difficult situation for me to accept and handle, especially as a child. So taking my medication was very difficult. And I used to play what I call hide and seek with treatment, trying to hide it from my parents. I'll say I have taken the medicine and I hide it under my tongue and I throw it later because it was just too much to handle. But also really at a mental and emotional aspect, how that affected me, how I felt about myself, the fear of would I get to tomorrow? Would I live? Would I be able to achieve all these ambitions and dreams that I had as a child? I would also really mention that as a challenge that I went through, finding myself and learning to love myself again, which is quite part and parcel of the acceptance journey. And lastly, really being sick and having to not be in school like every other child. It's quite disappointing that I even had to like literally repeat a whole class because I was not in school because I was really sick and I had to take time out to recover and recuperate and go through treatment. So I would highlight those as some of the challenges. Yeah.
So you share your challenges that are many, including adherence to treatment, acceptance. Today you are an activist, and one of the key points that you raise is the need for holistic services for young people living with HIV. What are some of the critical gaps in the current health system that you believe need to be addressed?
I would really, really highlight the need for holistic or integrated interventions, programs that really address issues beyond biomedical. From my own journey, I constantly say that what helped me and supported me majorly is having access to support, like support groups, what we now call psychosocial support groups, having access to an adherence counselor who was well-equipped and was patient with me, having access to beyond the medicine or the ARVs, which is very, very important. So I would really relate that as a gap right now compared to what I experienced in the health system then is that there's a lot of shift focusing on the medical aspect alone, which is a huge gap because we know adolescents and young people living with HIV do not just face a treatment issue. They face social issues, they face mental health issues, they face economic issues. So having programs, interventions, and a health system that really addresses these issues would be really nice because then as you're supporting someone to take their adherence and to take their medicine, then it means if they have an economic issue, they have access to that support. If they have a mental health issue, then they're able to see a psychiatrist or a therapist because the well-being of an individual is not medical alone. It is every part of their being. Yeah.
And as an advocate, you've also emphasized the need for young people living with HIV to be seen as equal rights holders. In what specific ways do you feel world leaders can best support this shift in perception? You are currently attending the United Nations and General Assembly. What do you hope to convey?
Ideally, for the longest time, adolescents and young people have majorly been at the receiving end. And the word is normally beneficiaries. We are the beneficiaries of programs, interventions that unfortunately are not really curated and designed by us. And for the longest time, we've seen these programs really not achieving their full potential because they're not designed to reflect and really address our lived realities. So for me, it's global leaders, development partners, providing an opportunity for the young people, you know, the wearers of these shoes, those of us who are living with this virus and experience these issues, to be able to partner with them or co-create these programs. That way I can have the opportunity to say this intervention should be implemented this way because when you do this way, then it will be able to address my gap. So for me, it's the opportunity to have shared power with the wearers of this shoe, with the people affected by this pandemic, so that we are able to curate programs that really, really reflect their lived realities, but programs that will be able to address the unmet needs that exist.
When you look at the way that HIV is addressed, one of the big issues is stigma and discrimination. It remains a significant barrier for people living with HIV and specifically young women. How has this impacted you personally, and what steps do you think governments and communities should take to reduce stigma?
From a personal experience, one of the things I would say for me is always the fear of rejection. And for adolescents and young people living with HIV, as we progress in our lives and transition into adulthood, and we start dating, there's always that fear of the person I'm going to meet, are they going to accept me or are they going to reject me if they know my status? So one of the things I have learned and experienced is that HIV is quite normal for those of us who are living with HIV and for those of us who are empowered about it. But for people who are not living with HIV or really directly affected, it still remains this disease that needs to be feared and to be run away from. So there is a huge need to really empower the larger population As we empower persons living with HIV with treatment literacy and information, we also really need to empower the larger population so that they understand that HIV is no longer a killer disease, that there is treatment, and that we persons living with HIV can have children who are free of HIV. We can have partners who are not HIV positive and they can remain HIV negative, because we have, science has evolved, there's different treatments, and we're seeing so many interventions to support us. So stigma, really, for us to be able to address it, it means we need to invest in awareness creation, giving communities information so that they're well informed, because a lot of times stigma comes from a point of no information, but also ignorance. And we all know that people need to be informed so that they know that it's no longer that disease we used to run away from, but that things have actually changed.
We know how social media is a tool that is utilized by young people today. How do you see the role of social media in fighting stigma and advancing the HIV response? And how have you personally used these platforms to make an impact?
That's actually a really good question, because we are what we call the digital age, or rather in the digital era, where young people are not only using existing platforms like this, but also utilizing their phones and laptops to get their messages out there. One of the things I have witnessed is what I call online advocacy, where young people take up space to tweet, to share on Instagram, to share their voices on TikTok about things they feel that need to be addressed. And for me, one of the most important things is when I don't have an opportunity to hold a microphone, and, you know, we all attend these events and these high level meetings, and not all of us will have an opportunity to say out loud our ideas and what we think. I have learned to take my Twitter up and just tweet and tag that individual that I want to pass my message to. And eventually it actually gets to them, because the idea is to not just limit your space to an offline space, but also utilize digital spaces to share your voice as young people, to share your inputs, because it is important that they are heard. One of the things for me is that young people are digitally literate, because, you know, the digital space is quite fast, and to be able to navigate it from an empowered point of view, then young people need to be digitally literate. So empowering young people to utilize their existing spaces, their voices, it doesn't have to be always in English or the commonly used language. Right now, we are asking young people to utilize their spaces in their own voice. They could write an article, they could record a video, they could do a dance and insert words. As long as the message is home, the most important thing that they get to use digital spaces to tell their stories as they feel so. And I always believe that through sharing, retweeting, and liking, that message eventually gets home.
What do you hope to achieve from your participation at the UN General Assembly? And how do you think your message will influence global HIV policies?
For me, one of the things I hope to achieve really is to remind the global leaders who I will be speaking to that day is that behind these numbers and these targets, those are actual people. And as they make recommitments, one for me is for them to actually think about their previous commitments, to actually ask themselves, what did they achieve and what should they do different this time around, because they will be making recommitments. But to really also find their voice and create an opportunity for us communities, for us young people, to co-create these recommitments with them. At the end of the day, for me as a young person, what matters is how we can action this back at home, back in Kenya. So I want to make sure that they remember that behind those numbers, there is me. But most importantly, their recommitments must reflect my lived realities.
That was HIV activist Jerob Limo. And that's all for today's Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaro. Thank you all for listening, and have a good night.